My message today is entitled Faith and Rationality. I actually want to start by sharing several quotes with you. Two from folks who were believers and two from folks who weren't. And each one of them are people that I respect. Now, I'm sharing them with you because I believe they each point to the same core belief that I'd like to talk about today. So the first quote comes from Blaise Pascal, who once said, "Men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it from religious conviction." Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase." Ernest Hemingway put it this way. He said, "All thinking men are atheists." And finally, Mark Twain, who put it most simply, saying, "Faith is believing in that which I know ain't so." Now, the core belief that I believe each one of these seemingly different quotes point to is that faith is a mindless pursuit. It requires some degree of checking your brain at the door. In other words, it's mostly irrational. But rational may not mean what we've colloquially come to believe that it means. I'd say that we've been selling rationality short. If we think of it as just being made up of systems of inductive proof, for example, mathematics, we're selling rationality short if we think of it as a behavior where you start with certain precepts and you only build on it very cautiously, only accepting theorems that have been rigorously proven, leaving everything else to the side as conjecture. If you're requiring people who adhere to various religious beliefs to meet that level of rigor, don't be surprised when they don't pass that test. But the reality is that bar is set too high for belief in pretty much any belief system. I was a part of a forum entitled Common Ground Conversations, and it involved an evangelical minister turned atheist and me having a conversation about how humanists and progressive Christians actually have more in common than in difference, and how we could become a substantial and influencing voting bloc if we could manage to just set aside the question of deity in favor of advancing policies that would make the world a better place. Now, inevitably, despite our efforts, during the question and answer portion, someone would bring up the question of deity. Now, one such question goes something like this. How can an atheist say that they know for sure that God doesn't exist? Well, the fact of the matter is, my experience in those conversations, that most atheists would concede that it is true that they don't claim to know that God exists in the same way that they know that Newton's third law is true. But they still are perfectly justified in claiming the name atheist. After all, think of it this way. Most of us don't believe that there's life on the planet Saturn, or other than maybe microbial life. But the reality is that we don't have any hands-on proof about that. Still, I would venture to guess that none of us, not one of us, would try to claim that we are an agnostic on that concept. We most likely come down on the side of there's no life on Saturn. I'd also venture to guess that most of us would consider it very rational behavior to believe that. You see, rational belief is not just a system of inductive proof. Rational belief is also theories that you favor based on the evidence that you have. It's a reality that you would bet on if you found yourself in a position where you needed to bet on it. It includes a lot of beliefs that are more working hypotheses, like our Saturn example, than proofs. Healthy faith can be understood in the exact same way. For some people, their belief system can actually be their best working hypothesis as they delve into the questions of morality and creation and humanity and any number of other considerations. It's not that they arrive at a decision about faith that they feel 100% confident about, as much as it is that the decision is their best hypothesis. And again, like in our Saturn example, it would be a misnomer to claim them to be agnostic. Berkeley professor Laura Buchok is an expert in decision theory and a philosopher in religion. Now, as an expert in decision theory and a philosopher in religion, she is somewhat uniquely qualified to look at the question of faith and rationality. She points out that people commonly treat faith as something stronger than belief, as something someone maintains despite evidence to the contrary. But Buchok argues that there's a sense in which faith actually goes, in her estimate, beyond evidence, but that it doesn't require believing something more strongly than the evidence suggests. So, and instead, she describes faith as a commitment to acting as if some claim is true without first needing to examine additional evidence that would potentially impact the claim, like our example of life on Saturn. To help sort of understand this perspective, she gives this scenario. If a man has faith that his spouse isn't cheating, this seems to rule out his hiring of, say, a private investigator or opening her mail or even striking up a conversation with her boss to check out that she was really at work late that night. That is, it rules out conducting an inquiry to verify that his spouse isn't cheating. If he doesn't do any of these things, then she can rightfully, or if he does do any of those things that I listed, she can rightfully complain that he doesn't have faith in her. And the reality is that even if he could be 100% sure that she'd been faithful, he still should have enough evidence to have a rational faith in her. Now, to further sort of confront the fable of faith being completely irrational, she brings up the story of so-called Doubting Thomas. As many of y'all know, I call him Inquisitive Thomas. Thomas asks to put his hand in Jesus' side to verify that he has been resurrected in the flesh. Now, traditionally, this story is supposed to teach us that faith requires a willingness to act as if something is true while also refraining from gathering evidence for the purpose of checking whether it's true, even if you no longer are certain that it's true. But honestly, who in their right mind would want to agree to live life that way? I mean, when you're uncertain of something, isn't it always better, not to mention more interesting, isn't it always better to have more evidence rather than less? Pulling from her own work in decision theory and rational choice theory and even some interesting mathematical determinations that she did, Buchok comes to the conclusion that, yes, indeed, faith can be rational. She says that for faith to be rational, a basic precondition first needs to be met. It's this. It must be the case that you think a claim is sufficiently likely and that the actions it supports sufficiently beneficial, that the expected utility of acting on the claim outweighs the expected utility of not doing so. I'll do that one more time, even slower. She says, for faith to be rational, it must be the case that you think a claim is sufficiently likely and the actions it supports sufficiently beneficial. So much so that the expected utility of acting on that claim outweighs the expected utility of not acting on that claim. So, for example, if you assign higher utility to a marriage in which both partners are faithful, more so than to one where either partner cheats, and you have good reason to believe that your partner is in fact faithful, then the expected utility of being faithful yourself can outweigh the thought of cheating. Her precondition ultimately supports the rationality of acting in a way that is consistent with your faith, like choosing not to cheat on a spouse. But she does continue saying that it's not necessarily committing to no longer gathering evidence. Now, believe it or not, Bukok's arguments for how faith can be rational get even more difficult to follow from that point on. But the conclusions, at least, aren't too hard to summarize. Basically this. Faith will be more likely to be rational when you begin with data for the claim in question, in contrast to, say, believing for the sake of believing. And almost counterintuitively, if you begin from an informed position, making decisions based on faith is more rational when the cost of examining further evidence is high, because you're more likely not to invest your time in examining the ones that wouldn't have any real impact on your faith. And then finally, and also seemingly a little bit counterintuitively, if you begin from an informed position, making decisions based on faith is more rational when the evidence is likely to be inconclusive or misleading, because ultimately, you can miss out on what was, in fact, a great opportunity while you're sitting around waiting on more data. Okay, now that you have stuck with me through all of that difficult-to-follow information, as we've sorted our way through the somewhat involved philosophical perspectives here, let me give you Bukok's two-sentence summary about rational faith. Get evidence first, but don't postpone acting forever. As the quotes I began with seem to indicate, the way that religious faith is sometimes talked about in the larger cultural conversation can be harmful to everyone who's trying to find out the truth in religious matters and how they should live their lives. There is a naive idea that faith requires believing against the evidence, or in the absence of evidence. Now, when that idea is adopted by the more extremist atheist, it can allow them to, dismiss all religious faith as irrational just by definition, without even considering what the evidence is for particular religious claims. Now, when that same idea is adopted by religious people, it can allow them to think that believing against evidence is somehow a virtue, which is harmful to the pursuit of truth. It can also be psychologically harmful to try to believe something you think you don't have any evidence for. So in the end, none of us have proof one way or the other. But we do have our ability to think and react rationally. And part of that is being willing to react in one direction or the other, even when we may not have all the evidence that might be out there. And in its own way, the choice of doing so, much like believing that there's no life on Saturn, is very rational. See, in the end, we all need a little more compassion and humility. Whether it comes from a place of humanism or a place of faith is much less important than the actual act of extending compassion and humility to each other. And in my book, it also happens to be one of the most rational things that we can do. Extend compassion and humility to one another. We'll now enter an 8-minute...
I'm Robin. My uncle Luke was an atheist till he was 98 years old. And Robin Shepherd led him to the Lord right before he died. And he turned to the Lord, but he was very, very strict atheist until he was 98. And he turned to the Lord.
Thanks for sharing that. Other thoughts on faith and rationality?
I'm Caroline. A couple of weeks ago, I went to visit my family members in Charlottesville. I was coming into Charlottesville on a Saturday morning, and as I approached just a couple of blocks from where my family lives, I saw a line of people being ushered from one meeting place to another place. They were wearing white shirts and helmets and carrying flags and sticks and shields with death heads on them. I had to stop because there was a light, so I looked out the window. What is this? Because I didn't know this was going to happen. And then one of them made a rude remark to me, and fortunately the light changed and I carried on. But how do I extend compassion and humility in such a case, other than just driving on?
I can't say that I have the answer to that.
Wow, what a great service. Caroline, I would suggest that one possible way to extend compassion to that gentleman, so-called, would be to look at him and say, bless you too, my brother. Bless you too.
Thanks, man.
Hi, I'm Kate. I don't know if all of you are familiar with Corrie ten Boom, Dutch lady who was imprisoned during World War II, she and her father and sister, for trying to help Jewish refugees. And one extraordinary thing she wrote in the biography that came out after the war was over was she felt one particular prison guard had treated she and her sister very badly, and was pretty much responsible for her sister's death. And years later, in 1961, she was giving a talk in Germany describing her experiences and talking about forgiveness and how do you forgive. And she saw the prison guard in the audience, and she thought, oh, please, God, don't let him come up and speak to me. I don't know if I can forgive him. What do I do? I can't say I forgive you because I haven't forgiven him. I may never be able to. And she felt that the response she was receiving was that it's God's job to forgive. If you can't, ask God to. And I appreciated hearing her say that because there are some things I don't know if any of us are able to forgive in our flesh. So you don't have to, I don't think. But you can ask God to.
Thanks for sharing, Kate. Are there others that would like to share on faith and rationality? Way in the back. And then in the next back. I think Mark said it had to stand up too.
Yeah, I'm Zora. Well, I don't see a conflict necessarily between faith, which is a type of thinking, which I think came about really through evidence, through experience. Because I've talked to a number of people about this. I've read a lot of books. Karen Armstrong's book, History of God, goes into it, and I know I've mentioned that book before, but a lot of people sense something, divine presence, have experiences with, with beings or miraculous, odd events, interesting clues that there are there are imminent presences, and that there's a lot of love coming from those presences. We can also project our own negativity out to create threatening presences as well. We have incredible powers of imagination, and it can become real to us. However, I think that that also comes about through truths that we perceive from within our own perceptions, and then we try to sort it out. I know many people who have had experiences of divine beings or other non-worldly beings, non-physical realities, physically based experiences. And speaking of rationality and faith, many scientists today are going on a sort of faith that their theory is correct. And there's a huge mounting pile of many, many facts and evidences that they cannot fit into current theories. And it's getting larger and larger and larger. All the things they're discovering under the ocean, they're discovering, old ruins buried, all this stuff that they're discovering, and they don't fit it into current theory, so they ignore it. If that isn't some kind of blind faith, then what else is it? I don't know. I'm just throwing these things out there.
Thanks for sharing. Mark, did I see your hand? You're going to have to, go all the way across the other side now.
Show me your hand.
Don't worry. We're all just watching you.
Who, where? Oh.
There was so many things to provoke so many different thoughts today. And I said one time that a lot of times I think folks don't respond to the service, but not because they don't have anything to say, but because they have too much to say. And they don't think there's no point in me even opening up the floodgate. But anyway, what was that initial thing you were saying about the hatred and religiosity there at the beginning of your
was that a quote?
Yeah,
it's probably thinking it's the first quote probably,
yeah,
from Blaise Pascal. Men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it under religious convictions.
Yeah, that really struck me because those that know anything about my past, I was brought up in independent fundamental Baptist, but leaned pretty far to the right. And there was a lot of things that I was taught, and not all of them were good. And there was a lot of issues around race, that went through church splits about whether white folks and black folks could sit in the same room and worship God together. And there was... As a young person, went to schools that supported those ways of thinking, and actually participated in what folks would consider now the wrong side of the protest issues. We would counter-protest gay pride events and things like that, and so. As I got older and, my brain more fully developed, I was disappointed in so many of the things that I had been taught that were things that were from God that I feel like now were probably more things from man that was being disguised as things from God. And I... was so disappointed in the church that just I decided that there was just not a place for me in church anymore, that it just could not operate within that framework anymore. And it's funny, Lugie's the hymn he led us in today is just so familiar because I just grew up with that. And I didn't have to look at the songbook because I'd sung it so many thousands of times that it just flowed out. But when you go through hardship in life, sometimes things are so overwhelming that you don't,
take your time.
You just, you don't know.
Take your time. You're not in a hurry. I think where you're going is important, so just breathe and give it a moment.
You try to find help wherever you can find help. And you don't know where that is sometimes, and so you tend to try to go back to places where they're familiar. And having been away from the church so many years, when my wife and I, when we lost our son, it was just, Jim Dollar referred to it as sometimes the piano just falls on you like in the cartoons, and you just have to lay there a while, and then when you're able to get up, you try to find relief where you can find it. And so just from a place of familiarity, nowhere to go but other than try to find relief at the church. And was so damaged by some of the things I was taught in church that I couldn't even walk into the church to start with. And I would go to the church after the service started and sit outside the door, crack the door open, and listen to the service from through the crack in the door to try to hear anything that could help. And eventually worked my way into the sanctuary, and still found that I couldn't get back to that place. And there was a lot of that I wouldn't want to get back to, but I wasn't able to. But this place here has it allows us to, none of us, what we know or think we know is static. It's all, we're constantly moving. And within this congregation, you know, we're all in a different place on the line as far as where we're at with faith and belief and what we wrestle with those things here week after week. And you know, sometimes you wish you could get back to a certain place, you know, and it's really hard to do that. But anyway, I've appreciated everything that I've heard from the pulpit and from our singer and from the folks in the congregation today.
Thank you, Mark.
Some of y'all know me, some of y'all don't, but the most thing I have faith in is God. God's going to take care of me. I lost my daughter 6 weeks ago. And I used to come to this church when Frank D used to come up here, and some of you probably remember that, but I think he's downtown now, and I lost my daughter. She stole $200 from me, wrecked my car, and took an overdose. And, you know, so, but I have faith that God is going to get me through this and take care of me. I mean, if you read any coin that you get, any dollar bill, it don't say trust in man or woman. It says trust in God. And that's my faith. Love y'all. Peace.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you very much.